Space, the final frontier, and one Oxford researcher is trying to boldly go where only a few men slash women have gone before. But first, there is that small, pesky little detail. She's got to get a seat on a rocket ship. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are meeting up with a quantum physicist with big dreams and asking, how do you become an astronaut? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we get them to weigh in on the tricky questions that help us understand the world around us. And for this voyage, we're meeting up with an aspiring astronaut.
Hey, my name is Merritt Moore, and I just graduated in quantum optics in the atomic and laser physics department at the University of Oxford, and I'm a professional ballet dancer.
And you want to go to space.
And I want to go to space.
Why would you want to go to space?
Oh, man. So I actually had dreamed of going to space when I was really young, but then that dream kind of faded, I think, because, I don't know, I was just, in my childhood, those kind of, the astronaut stories weren't around, and especially at career fairs, it's not one of the options.
Merritt is very serious about space. Last summer, while cramming to finish her PhD, she heard about this new program the BBC was casting for called Astronauts. Do you have what it takes?
It was funny. I was actually at a dinner and someone mentioned that they got a funny email. The BBC was looking for astronaut candidates. And I just jumped up from the table and grabbed my phone and just applied from the hallway because I was like, that is so cool. I applied and then from there, oh man, I waited probably 2 months without hearing anything.
Like, did you write it off at that point?
Kind of, yeah. And I was really bummed. But then, yeah, 2 months later, we had to do another interview process. You had to make a video answering some questions. Then we had some physical tests and collaborative tests where we had to make an IKEA wardrobe that was supposed to take like 50 minutes, but we had to make it in 10 minutes or less. But we didn't find out that we were selected until it was like 2 weeks before the actual filming. So it was quite a bit stressful because A, my thesis was due the following month, and this takes a full month of your time. And so I had to then that day quickly go beg the physics department saying, can I take a month off to go do this incredible experience? That's a once in a lifetime experience. And they were very understanding.
Immense congratulations to you. You are the final 12th. But at
the premise of the show is fairly simple. Take 12 high achievers, don't tell them anything, and then put them in a lot of high stress situations created by the coolest astronaut, Chris Hadfield, and let him judge whether or not they got what it takes to become an astronaut.
After having gone through that selection process, I was like, man, Chris Hadfield is another being. He's like just out of this world. So having that opportunity to have been part of the selection process that he had organized and was phenomenal, because he had organized all of these activities, because he said, I want, you know, everyone who's gone through this to be able to write on their CV, like when they actually apply to be an astronaut, that they've gone through the selection process, and for this to be a huge boost in their career.
And while the show was fairly selective, the actual process of becoming an astronaut is hyper selective. So get your job center checklist out. Let's run through this. What you need to become an astronaut. For NASA, you need to be between the ages of 26 and 46. For ESA, that shrinks down to 29 and 36. You need a minimum of a bachelor's in mathematics, engineering, or sciences. And like, let's be real here. Deep down, you need a PhD. Then you need 3 years of professional experience in your degree or 1,000 hours piloting time on a jet plane. Plus, you need to speak another language, preferably Russian.
And then you need to have, like, physically, you need to have cardiovascular endurance and great eyesight. And then you need to be the right height, so between, like, 1.3 to 1.9 meters. But just that alone isn't enough. So, for instance, ESA had 10,000 applicants when Tim Peake was applying, and out of those applicants, 8,400 passed there is some computer test of like psychological profiling and memory tests. So already that's 8,400. But then after that, they go through very intensive medical examination and physical examination, which then they whittled the 8,400 down to 22 people, which is insane. Like, that's incredible. There's a funny quote by like Andrew Thomas that was like, it was the most invasive week of my life, where the medical tests, so he said that they poked and prodded in places that he didn't think were possible. So,
and on the show, Chris Hadfield tried to do everything he could to make them crack under the pressure and show them how psychologically taxing it can be to go to space.
So like the first test they had us do was like, we had to go into a helicopter and hover 6 meters above the ground. And none of us had ever been in a helicopter.
Gave it up 10 seconds.
You have control of the psychic only.
I have control.
There was an instructor there, but just figuring it out under pressure, you had 20 minutes to figure it out.
Wait, so they said to you, hey, get in that helicopter,
and
you're going to fly it.
Yeah.
What?
And they said that they were going to count the seconds, and we all laughed, being like, ha, we could hover a helicopter for minutes. It was literally seconds. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Because you think hover, I was like, okay, I'm not going to move my hand. So I didn't move my hand. And the whole helicopter just like went crazy, went all over the place. So it was so incredibly sensitive. And for that, they were testing, yeah, what's your stress level? How do you cope under pressure? How quickly can you pick up a skill like that?
You have control of something.
I have control.
During the process, we never knew how we did relative to each other. So in the astronaut selection process, they never say where people are ranked. We just had no idea. So for instance, we had to sit in a little pod in the complete darkness and tie up our shoelaces and count to 20 minutes and then come out at the 20-minute mark. And till I saw the show, we had no idea how people had done. We knew based off each other who had exited the pod first and who had exited last. But so I thought I did quite badly on that. But when I was watching the show, I realized, oh, I actually had done best on that. But we just didn't know until we actually watched the show, because they wouldn't tell us, which is part of the psychological aspect of it, because you think you're doing way worse than you actually are. And it's like, how are you able to cope with that?
Was there anything that like really surprised you about the experience you went through?
Well, what surprised me was like how useful video games would have been. So like the minute I left the process, I like called on my dad and was like, Dad, video games would have been really helpful as a kid, because TV and video games were banned when I was a child. But I realized during the process, you know, to dock the Soyuz into the ISS, like it's all based off these controls that you're using with your hand and being able to estimate, you know, and coordinate your hand movement with what a vehicle is doing, you know, miles and miles away or like on the screen.
There is one quality that makes Merritt stand out against the other candidates. You know, it's not just that she's a quantum physicist that can solve problems that make my brain melt and want to run for my duvet. She is also a ballerina, like an incredible ballerina. And if she gets to space, Merritt is already working out what experiments she wants to work on.
I would love to explore more of like movement and dancing in space and observing like the torque and forces that happen, you know, with zero G, like what's in zero gravity, and how fascinating that would be from a physical like dancer side, and then from a quantum optics side, like it's really cool to there are experiments that deal with like entangled photons, where you entangle particles of light called photons. So these particles have a connection, they're entangled, and then you separate them distances, and they still have this kind of, they're still in a way connected in their properties. And so with going into space, that would be so cool to have like an entangled particle on Earth and then have its pair up in this in space and explore that and see, you know, how far can you make this entanglement go.
So let's go back to the job center checklist for astronaut. Merritt's got most of these things. She is working on the Russian. She is learning how to fly. And at the end of the filming of the BBC show, before heading to the pub, her astronaut hero, Chris Hadfield, did give her some advice on things she could work on.
I realized that my background and my interest has always been very solitary. So I've worked in a lab by myself. I like work late hours, and same in a dance studio. I kind of train by myself, like late hours. But in terms of team, like being part of a big team, that hasn't been part of my, I guess, training in a sense, or being responsible for other people, like other people's lives in particular. So Chris Hadfield had recommended to me that I also like sign up to be like a volunteer firefighter to kind of have that responsibility and get used to being responsible for other people's lives.
NASA isn't the only game in town. Merritt can apply to ESA, the European Space Agency, or she could go private and see what SpaceX are up to. But none of these options are sure things.
ESA actually is way more difficult. Like, they had first applications in 1978, second in 1992, and then the last one they had in 2008. So the timing slot is very, very difficult. NASA has openings, or has had openings, every few years. The probability is a bit better, but I mean, it's really difficult.
And much like anything in life, there are no guarantees. But if she does everything on her to-do list, becomes a volunteer firefighter, learns Russian, learns to fly, I mean, Merritt will be a pretty amazing human being that we can all look up to.
I'd be so happy just to continue like the training, even though the probability is so low, right? But to continue that, because I think it would just make me such a better person in general.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons and additional music from Lee Rosevear. A special thanks to Merritt Moore and the BBC. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet us at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook. And please, please leave us a review if you like this podcast. It helps other people who have similar interests that fall along the algorithm spectrum find us as well. Oh yeah, and we've got this pretty incredible website. You should go check that out too. It is oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.